Well, as far as this world is concerned, they have an election coming up on Tuesday, just 2 days from now. And I guess it's some would say it's a choice of who gets to rip the country apart. But because of that, I thought we would talk about what in the world is going on. And, of course, how does it affect us individually? What should you and I do about it and not do about it? Well, what's happening in the world today is not mere chaos. It shows determined design by Lucifer and also intelligent design by the Almighty, our Jehovah God. We can see the pattern by comparing many different scriptures. Now, if you wanted to give somebody an idea of what this auditorium looks like, Mike, where would you stand to take a picture of it? You need to take a 360-degree picture of it. That's right. There's no place that a single snapshot would get the whole thing. And that's just the way it is with the scriptures, that there's a prophecy here and a type over there that gives you one part of it, and then the other gives you another part of it. And then you put them all together, and you get a fairly good idea of it. Now, the scripture does say, we see through a mirror darkly, or a glass. Well, that means that we don't get every detail of it. We shouldn't expect every detail to be perfectly clear, but we should see something through it. If we look at Joshua 6, that's a picture of the gospel age. That's Joshua marching the army around Jericho. And it shows us that he marches around 7 days. It starts with Joshua rose early. Oh yeah, what's the Hebrew form of the name, the Greek form of the name Joshua? That's right. He's an excellent type of Jesus. And then those 7 days go up until the wall falls down. That shows us then that the gospel age is divided into 7 periods of time. And then they marched around 7 times on the last day. So it shows us we've got 7 major world events during the last day of the gospel age. If we turn now to Exodus, that would be 7:14 through the middle of 15:22. That's a very long type in the scriptures. It gives us Christ's first advent to eternity, from the time that Moses comes to the land until they march out of the land, and ultimately they go 3 days' journey in the wilderness to serve the Lord their God. It gives us more details of the 7 periods of the last day. That is when the Lord separates between the Israelites and the Egyptians. The first 3 plagues are administered, each one by Aaron alone. The last 7 plagues, the Lord separates between the people so that the plagues fall only upon the Egyptians and not upon the Lord's people. And then Moses takes the dominant role, showing that at our Lord's return, the Lord begins the harvest work of separation. Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. Okay, I'll just briefly mention what I think that we have seen. Go back to the time when Israel began returning to the land. That was in the 1870s. I won't go up, go into the roughly 5 years that preceded it that opened up the way for them to go back. But we start with the long depression that started in 1873 and continued for a couple of decades. And then we got another plague that was a destructive plague, murrain, that killed the cattle, World War I. And then boils and blains that were on man and upon beast, non-destructive, terribly annoying, but non-destructive. Okay, the next major world event was the Great Depression, lasted 10 years. The next was lightning and thunder with hail and fire that ran along upon the ground, destroying the first two of the four crops, grain crops of Egypt. World War II was the next major world event. And then came the east wind that brought locusts into all the borders of Egypt until it destroyed all the remaining two crops of Egypt that had already come up. And then a mighty west wind came and blew them all out again. Well, we saw the eastern communist powers bringing communist problems into all the borders of Egypt, especially into the Roman Catholic countries. And then by 1989, we pretty much had seen the west wind blowing them all out again. Well, the next major world event is a plague of darkness. Doesn't kill anybody, but terribly annoying. The darkness that lasted for 3 days, it would suggest to me, like the other two non-destructive plagues, it's likely to be the Deep Depression. And that's the last one before we get to the Armageddon plague, the destruction of the firstborn of Egypt, or the heirs of the kingdom of this world. And then we go to Judges, chapter 7. Gideon had three enemies. I think it was the Ammonites and the, that would be the Midianites, and I think the Amalekites and the children of the east, or the Arabs. But those three enemies proceeded to destroy each other. I think they would associate that pretty much with the last day, and especially with the Armageddon plague. Second Chronicles 20, again we have three enemies. Jehoshaphat has three enemies: the Ammonites, the Moabites, and the inhabitants of Mount Seir. Now, I'll just very tentatively suggest the Ammonites in the north represent the northern power, particularly leftist atheism, headed by Russia currently at least, and then Moab, Islam, and then the inhabitants of Mount Seir, a religious community, and not a good one, but a religious community, more so than the others, representing Christendom or Rome in particular. But something's a little different here. It gives us a little more detail. We have first, when Jehoshaphat's people began singing praise to Jehovah God, suddenly the Lord set liars in wait against the Ammonites and the Moabites and the inhabitants of Mount Seir, so that Ammon and Moab proceeded to destroy those of Mount Seir first, and then they destroyed one another without the Lord's people having to lay a hand on it. That would suggest to me that you've got leftism, atheist, and you've got Islam cooperating together to destroy what's called Christianity and trying to destroy Israel, but we know about what the chances of that are, don't we? In Revelation 16, from verses 12 to 21, we see three unclean spirits from the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. They gather together the people for Armageddon. Well, the dragon is not too difficult to figure out. That would be the civil powers. Leftist atheism in all probability here. The beast clearly is associated with Rome, as it is in the prophecies of Daniel. And now the false prophet, without going into detail at this point, The false prophet of Mohammed would seem to fulfill that role rather well. Those are the three great influences in the world today that will gather together the people for Armageddon. But two of them gang together to destroy the third one before proceeding then to destroy each other. In Ezekiel 37, then 38 and 39, first, the Valley of Dry Bones shows us the Lord restoring Israel to its land. And then 38 and 9 show the Eastern Bloc invading Israel and the Western Bloc. Now, I've got a question for everybody. What foreign nation helped Israel to come out of Egypt at the time of the Exodus? None. That's right. It's a good thing, as it turns out. Because if that nation had been able to help Israel come out of Egypt, they would have taken the credit for it, wouldn't they? As a result, there was no one to give the credit to except Jehovah God himself. Does it look like it's any different today? Last year, there were just two nations that officially were pro-Israel, other than Israel itself. And Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, fell from election last year. Leaves just one, Angela Merkel in Germany, of all places. And her policies regarding Syrians seem destined to self-destruct. So, will there be any nation that defends Israel, or will all her lovers have left her? Now, what about those three unclean spirits again? Today it would look like the dragon, leftist atheism, the beast, especially Rome, and the false prophet, Islam. What are the attractions of each of these three? Well, in sectarian Christianity, your salvation is in the organization. Does that sound familiar? And of course, as it proceeded, what came to sort of what we might call the depths of the Dark Ages and the Inquisition, in which that power was badly used. In Islam, the attraction is, you kill the infidels to earn your salvation. Murder? Is that a good thing? With atheism, it probably needs a little bit more explanation as to what the attraction is there. I remember that when I was much younger, it was back perhaps in the 1960s, early 70s, I began hearing a strange thing that in school, the children needed to feel good about themselves. It doesn't matter how bad they've done. They need to feel good about themselves. No matter how bad you are, don't feel guilty. Well, how are you going to deal with the problem of sin in your own self if you don't even recognize it? And then they tell you, fight the real enemy. All businesses are evil. Religion is evil. Rally around a protest. Protest something that's worse than you are. Currently, I think that's human-induced climate change. I'll just deviate here for a moment. It's interesting to see, okay, the growth of carbon dioxide in the air goes up exponentially for a while, and that up to about the year 2000, with some variations in there. But since the year 2000, the carbon dioxide has continued to grow exponentially, but the average global temperature has leveled off. And yet, one of the politicians said, refrigerators are a greater problem than ISIS. With leftism, it's all about feelings. Government über alles. Do we see Lucifer's hand in this also? Leftism. It's all about feelings. Reality is whatever you imagine it to be. That's headed by Hollywood and the media. Now, one justifies his own hate by accusing others of hate. Accuse others before they accuse me. And they say, Christians are homophobic. Men are misogamists, sexists. Those who want to exclude criminals at the border are xenophobic. A non-black is a racist. A black is an Uncle Tom. Nothing you can do to escape unless you conform. Do we see the devil's hand in all this? The meaning of the word devil is accuser. Now, one may consider there are certain exceptions to this three enemies. One of them is Abraham in Genesis 14. There's four enemies. There's a leader and a sub-tribe on one side, and a leader and a sub-tribe on the other side. It would seem the fourth one probably is because of the two divisions of Islam. From Ezekiel 38, Persia is to be in the eastern bloc, and Arabia is to be at the head of the western bloc. Do we see that creeping already? I think we do. So that could account for why in Genesis 14 we see the four enemies, but with two that are on the top, but cooperating together against the Lord's people. So where do leftism, atheism, sectarian Christianity, and Islam fit in? There again, in Judges, the seventh chapter, we have these three tribes that are against Israel, headed by Midian. And Gideon pairs his army down from 32,000, I think it was, pairs it down to 10,000, then down to 300. And then he takes the 300 and divides them into groups of 100 each, three groups. So, you've got this river, and you've got two hills on the north side of the river. So, there's only three ways for the Midianites and their two allies to escape. Upstream, downstream, or between the hills. So it's evident from the geography, yes, he put one of the group of hundreds upstream, another 100 downstream, and the third one between the two hills. And he got the three enemies to destroy each other. I think we can see the likelihood of that now between leftist atheism, Christendom, and Islam. Now, leftism, atheism, and Islam are utterly incompatible. Can you see any elements of compatibility between them? I think the answer is no. So who could get these two to cooperate to try to put an end to Christianity in Israel? I think we have our definite evidence of Satan as a real, live, personal being. Now, I recognize our Christadelphian friends will not agree, but it seemed to me that's strong evidence. Will either Christianity or Israel succumb? It appears that the Lord is taking his protection away from what's called Christianity, but not from Israel. I've mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again. Just one of the incidents. At the county fair 2 years ago, first weekend we had some Jewish ladies selling a product, a little massage product. Oh, they were delighted when they saw these booklets on the future of Israel and the world. I don't think we could have done any wrong at that point. But I asked one of them, do you know about that missile that was launched from Gaza about a month ago, headed straight for the defense ministry in Tel Aviv? Well, they responded. They sent up an Iron Dome interceptor, and it missed. They almost never miss. They sent up a second one, it missed, and a third one, and it missed. And at the last minute, the wind blew it into the Mediterranean. That took the breath out of me a bit when she said, yes, I know about that missile. My mother works in that defense ministry, and she would have been killed. A little while later, I got my thoughts back together, and I asked another one, do you have any feel for why those three interceptors all missed? She says, I think the Lord was telling us he's in charge. Russell clipped a little item out of the paper, and it attached along with that incident. And it was a journalist interviewing a fellow from Gaza. And the interviewer says, why don't you aim your missiles better? He says, we do aim them, but our God keeps blowing them away. Now, in Ezekiel 37, it's interesting that first the bones come together, then the sinews come up to hold them together, then the flesh comes up, and then skin on them, but still they have to wait longer before the spirit or the breath comes into them. I think the bones coming together would be that which started in October of 1878. Petah Tikva was the first new Jewish community reestablished, and after a bump or two, now they are a city of well over 100,000 people. And about one new Jewish community a month was started ever after. Gaione, I think, was November. The sinews might suggest the necessity that some Arabs cooperated with the Jews and some killed them. So the Jews started the what's now the IDF, or Israeli Defense Force. They had to fight to keep their existence. And then the flesh comes up. I suggest that likely the commerce. They do very well. Jewish merchants are pretty well known around the world. And then the skin comes up on them. I think that would be 1948 when they got marked boundaries. But still the spirit is not yet there. For that we'll have to wait till after Armageddon and the kingdom is established. But when they have a government of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses and David and Daniel and all the others, well, how can the country miss? Now, I suggest my observation is Lucifer's current goal is to take down the West. We see that in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, where Mount Seir is the first one to be eliminated. We see more detail in Ezekiel chapter 38, Gog and Magog. What seems plausible, maybe more than plausible, is that we have one more major world event before we get to Armageddon. You can decide whether that's good or bad. But that would be, I think, a deep depression. Will the 3 days mean 3 years of it? Don't know, but I will be watching to see. If so, the government may seize printing. It may seize the internet. and dissenting media, and even forbid meetings, as they did when leftism had its sway in the Soviet Union the first time. Now, what is God's purpose? God determines to convince the world of their ungodliness, leading to their self-destruction. Liars cannot get along. Only they can cooperate till they've destroyed people who tell the truth. And as far as I know, among the religions or non-religions of the world, it is only Israel and Christianity that value truth. Not all of them even. But what other religion or philosophy values truth as something that one should only tell the truth and no lies? Now, what is the Christian's duty? Because that is really the thing that affects us. Just a reminder, Habakkuk has three chapters. The first chapter is, Lord, I know your people, professed Christians, have sinned. But why do you let the less righteous execute the punishment? Chapter 2, the Lord says, yes, I know they are still more unrighteous, but wait until you see what happens to them. Chapter 3, Habakkuk says, okay, Lord, I will be content with your judgment. Now, what do we do about it? If a deep depression is likely, then the best advice I know is two pieces. Get out of debt and stay out of debt. Now, at the same time, there's reason for longer-term optimism. God has given the restoration of Israel as a concrete pledge that he will indeed establish his kingdom. When I want to see modern miracles, Israel is the place I look for them. When the world are all against Israel, stay off the bandwagon. Now, also, concerning our Jewish acquaintances, I think it's wise if we encourage our Jewish acquaintances, or maybe their children, to make aliyah, that is, to go up to Israel, while one can still do it freely. That was a good idea in the 1920s, until in 1933, Adolf Hitler took power. It can easily happen here. Never again? I'm afraid, yes, it can happen once again. Because the Jewish population in Central Europe is decimated. In Eastern Europe, since World War II, and especially since 1989, it has been pretty hot for Jews. Here is the last concentration, the last major concentration of Jews. The Americas, predominantly the U.S., then Canada, and Argentina. And let's keep in mind, we are called to come out of Babylon, that we be not partakers of her sins. That should be our motivation. A side benefit is, and that you receive not of Babylon's plagues. So do not let leftism and Islam drive us back into Babylon. Is there a temptation? And the answer is yes. We're sorry to see our Christian friends being given a terrible time by leftism and atheism. But still, we are not to join the organizations that have entrapped them. The people are good. Sometimes the heads of those organizations are not. as we have seen over the past few decades. Now, along with that, let's season our words carefully, because someday we might have to eat them. Another thing, we have the ability to use technology to witness. We have telephone, we have airplanes, automobiles, the printing press, the internet, yes. All of these things we have. Let's use them while we still can. Because the Deep Depression may give government control and end it. Just a little side note, but it's good for all of us to think about it. I've known several basically happy people in my life. And they've been all kinds of different kinds of people. Except there's one thing they all have had in common. They were so busy doing things for others, they weren't worried about their own happiness. Those who do only for self simply cannot be happy. The Lord's made that fundamental. Now consider, what is our training? Those who are consecrated are being trained to be a priesthood for the next age. One of the things we have to do is learn to have love even for our enemies. In the next age, we'll need to help inquisitors, Islamicists, and leftists. We'll take a look at Jude. The Epistle of Jude. And we'll get a better idea, I think, of our role in all of this. Let's start with verse 3. Beloved, that's Jude, verse 3. While I was giving all diligence to write unto you of our common salvation, I was constrained to write unto you, exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith which was once for all delivered unto the saints. Now, that doesn't say to be earnestly contentious for it, but to earnestly contend for the faith once delivered to the saints. For there are certain men crept in privily, even they who were of old written of beforehand under this condemnation, ungodly men, turning the grace of our God into lasciviousness, and denying our only Master and Lord, Jesus Christ. One of the ways that could be done is to say, your salvation is in the organization rather than in your personal relationship to Jesus Christ. Now I desire to put you in remembrance, though ye know all things once for all, that the Lord, having saved the people out of the land of Egypt, afterwards destroyed them that believed not, and angels that kept not their own principality, but left their proper habitation, he hath kept in everlasting bonds under darkness, under the judgment of the great day. We think about Armageddon there. Even as Sodom and Gomorrah, and the cities about them, having in like manner with these given themselves over to fornication, and have gone after strange flesh, are set forth as an example, suffering the punishment of eternal fire. Yet in like manner, these also in their dreamings defile the flesh, and set at naught dominion, and rail at dignities, rail at those who will teach right from wrong. But Michael the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a railing judgment, but said, the Lord rebuke thee. For that we go back to Zechariah, the third chapter. And there we see in those first five verses, instead of the devil, we see Satan. Instead of Michael the archangel, the angel of Jehovah. And instead of the body of Moses, we have Joshua the high priest standing in filthy garments. There we have a picture of Jesus, of Satan, and of the church, because we have no righteousness of our own. All our righteousness are but as filthy rags or a polluted garment. But these rail at whatsoever things they know not, and what they understand naturally, like the creatures without reason. In these things are they destroyed. Here's the lesson for us, that we not bring railing accusations against other people, even those who are plainly guilty. Yeah, if somebody asks us, we're to tell the truth, but we are not to go out of our way to be nasty, no matter how rotten the particular individual might be. Woe unto them, for they went in the way of Cain and ran riotously in the error of Balaam for hire and perished in the gainsaying of Korah. Cain was willing to murder his brother because of jealousy over the Lord's favor. Ran riotously in the error of Balaam, which was being willing to sell himself for what profit he personally could get. And perished in the gainsaying of Korah. Moses, who are you and Aaron to take so much upon yourselves? We're just as holy as you are. Have you ever seen that in Christian community? And it can happen in Bible student community, any community, because Satan is active. These are they who are hidden rocks in your love feasts when they feast with you. Shepherds that without fear feed themselves, clouds without water, carried along by winds, autumn trees without fruit, having died twice, plucked up by the roots. Now to me that sounds like the second death. Plucked up by the roots seems to me to confirm that. Wild waves of the sea, foaming out their own shame, wandering stars, no real sense of right and wrong, whatever is for personal advantage, for whom the blackness of darkness hath been reserved forever. And to these also Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied, saying, Behold, the Lord came with ten thousands of his holy ones to execute judgment upon all. Tens of thousands of his holy ones? I think 144,000 would qualify. To execute judgment upon all and to convict all the ungodly of all their works of ungodliness which they have ungodly wrought and of all the hard things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. And I think that's what the Lord has been bringing this world to see, is just how rotten it is to put forth a profusion of lies. Some of the sentiment or philosophy is, whatever happens, it's to your disadvantage, deny everything. Accuse others before they accuse you. But it will catch up with them. And the purpose is to take, whether it's 50% of this country or 99% of this country or somewhere in between, and Western Europe and the rest of the world, to see that the lying and selfishness is the thing that got them into all of this trouble. And imagine what it will be like when somebody in Egypt, in Iraq, or Iran says, why are we dying so miserably now? But what's this we hear about going on in Israel, that people are coming back from the dead? Think maybe they'll realize this is time to reevaluate and to listen to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. After all, the Mohammedans, the Muslims, claim to be descended from Abraham. I think they are through the six sons of Keturah, as well as the Bedouins from Ishmael. But they will realize when Abraham says, "You thought I said what?" But we get back to that sworn promise. "In thy seed," which is Christ, "shall all the nations of the earth bless themselves." Won't there be blessings from heaven to earth? Yes, indeed. That was in the first edition of the promise. But also, they will bless themselves, because it won't be just blessing from heaven to earth. People will bless one another in that day, in the thousand-year kingdom of Christ, and after the little season, forever and ever without end.